Welcome to Transformers, the podcast about how business people and policymakers are creating a sustainable future. I'm your host, Kai Embren.
My guest today is Carl Pope. He's a veteran leader in the environmental movement and the former head of Sierra Club. Today, he advises on economics of sustainability, serving as senior climate advisor to Michael Bloomberg. He is also the author of 4 books, including the New York Times bestseller, Climate of Hope. Welcome, Carl. Great to have you as a guest in Transformers.
It's nice to be with you. Very nice, Kai.
You have been a long-standing critic of oil and gas industry, what led you to revise your position on the importance of capturing methane, even when it may provide short-term benefits to fossil fuel operators?
Well, I think it's important to make certain that the way we do this leaves the oil industry as a whole responsible for its mess. But what we have tried to do and what is clearly not working, at least in the United States, where we have a lot of different oil companies, is we have tried to recover the costs of our dependence on oil well by well. And that really doesn't work. We have too many wells, they can be sold, and it simply isn't a good. So what we ought to do is make sure that the funds are there to clean up oil as quickly as it needs to be cleaned up, and they can then be recovered from the oil industry collectively. So it's a matter of understanding that the polluter pays principle shouldn't be applied to individual wells, because then we get into a nightmare of accounting. But if we say oil as a whole is paying its share of the bill, which it's not right now, let us be clear, so that I am in favor of higher taxes on the oil industry, but I don't think we should try to do it well by well. We should simply say, if you produce oil and you sell oil, you will pay an excise tax that is larger than the excise tax you are paying today, at least in the United States. I know European excise taxes are higher. They might or might not be reasonable. I'm not an expert on that.
But how do you think that the climate movement navigate the tension between the urgent action and avoiding the perception of rewarding polluters?
Well, I think we need to use the analogy, one of my favorite analogies to look at questions like that. It goes back to Benjamin Franklin, who was one of the founding fathers in the United States and who created the first social insurance company. And Franklin's great breakthrough was to say, everybody in the neighborhood has to pay for the insurance because everybody in the neighborhood has to pay for fireproofing the neighborhood. And it's the same thing. We need to understand this is a social problem. And we shouldn't be trying to say, oh, who owned in that one well which is leaking? Maybe only a little bit, but if you have a million of them, that's a lot. So my view is this is not a matter of going soft on the oil industry. It's a matter of socializing the oil industry's legacy, which is extremely destructive, and collecting it from the oil industry as a whole.
When we look at what's coming out from the International Energy, IEA, 70% of the methane emissions from oil and gas operation could be technically avoided today. That potential remains untapped. In your view, what's holding us back? Political will, economic incentives, or technological gaps?
Well, it's probably got a little bit of all of those three things, and that shouldn't intimidate us. But the fundamental thing is we haven't thought it was important enough. If you look at the fact that we report on the impact of methane on the climate using a completely, completely fabricated metric, which says, let's look at what happens over 100 years when methane impacts what happens in the next 10 years far more dramatically. And that's the threat. And that's like if somebody was, if I was driving 50 miles an hour in a street in a city and I killed somebody, and then I drove 5 miles an hour to escape, and I said, oh, I wasn't driving fast. My average speed was only 7 miles an hour. We need not to look at the average. We need to look at the high impact. And the high impact of methane is in its first decade and maybe its first 20 years. And we don't even measure it that way. It isn't reported that way, even though the UN says you can. But everybody would prefer to pretend that we only had one problem, CO2. We have two problems, CO2 and CH4. We have methane and CO2, and we need to deal with both of them. And in fact, right now, the opportunity to make progress is better on methane because we haven't paid attention to it. The child you've never paid attention to is always the child who can learn fastest.
But do you think that we will see political will coming up to this short-term urgency?
Well, that is a question, of course. I can report, sadly, that from the federal government in the United States of America, you are not going to see leadership of any sort. So that is most unfortunate. Europe has been in the lead, and Europe has the motive to be in the lead because Europe is a consumer. And as a consumer, Europe can say, we're going to import the cleanest gas we can find. We're not going to import gas, because Europe is still going to import gas. But Europe could say quite easily, and has said so far, there was a big fight and the good guys won the fight. Europe has said, we will import the lowest intensity, the lowest methane intensity gas we can. That by itself will drive the oil industry to clean up. It is the main thing the oil industry is afraid of, is loss of markets.
We were talking about methane capture tends to happen where infrastructure exists and the gas has market value. But in remote areas or weakly regulated countries, venting and flaring remain widespread. How do we elevate methane capture to a global standard rather than just the best practice in wealthier regions?
Well, if you want to look at, it's not really whether you're remote or not, because after all, the world's cleanest gas comes from some rather remote oil fields that are run by the Norwegians. That's the cleanest oil in the world. And it doesn't matter that it is pretty far away from big population centers, because the Norwegians want to clean it up. We have to make the people who produce it. And interestingly, in the last 2 years, since many oil-producing countries took pledges to cut, you might be surprised to know that, one, the oil industry as a whole is not moving to fulfill those pledges, but two, the country that has done the most is Turkmenistan, because Turkmenistan brought in good advisors who said, if you want to have a market for your oil in the future, you better clean it up now because the Europeans are going to set standards. So the Turkmens cleaned up to keep themselves eligible for access to the European market. So that's the key. The consumers have the power and they need to exercise that power.
But then we also look into the wave of innovation we see here and everywhere, from satellite-based monitoring to mobile capture skids. What role should these emerging technologies play in the climate movement strategy, especially when many are developed or deployed by very industries where working on the energy transition?
Well, the technology, we need to do a much better job of measuring where methane is leaking. And that requires probably three layers of detection. First, we have the satellites. The satellites will help us to detect really big and overall problems. It'll give us a big picture understanding, but it won't tell us there's a well here that needs to be cleaned up. The satellites are not good at that level of granularity, but they will give us the big picture. Then you have airplanes. Airplanes are probably the key ingredient because airplanes can capture 70% of the methane leakage, and they can capture where it is with enough detection that you can go in and clean it up if you were the oil company that owns that particular part of land. And then finally, you need to have handheld devices that are technological that tell you this pump is leaking. So you need three layers, and we don't even have a complete one layer. I would say, I think from my point of view, since 70% of the methane leaks can be detected at the airplane level of granularity, I think airplanes are the most important because it's not that, I mean, you have to do it once a month. I mean, that would be very high quality data if you did it once a month. And you're using small planes. The world is full of small planes that are used to spread fertilizer and chemicals and that sit around doing nothing much of the time. So we have enough planes. So I think we can just move very rapidly to improve the quality of our data by focusing on the airplane level.
I don't know if you have been following our dialogues around ventilation air methane, VAM technologies, traditional used in underground coal mining. Do you think these kinds of solutions have been underused or underrecognized?
First of all, clearly with regard to the coal industry, they've been underused because we have lots and lots, again, in the United States, and I'm quite sure they have them in China too. There are really four big fossil fuel sources of methane leaks, and one of them is coal. And coal is not by any means abated. So we need to get on top of coal, and we need to be willing to use new technology. And then the question that I would say is an open question about coal mines is, can you in fact detect and then can you capture and sell the actual methane? Methane is, after all, still a commercial product. And it is still something we should be selling, not burning. But I don't know the viability of that in the coal mine situation. Mm.
But we have some tendency of developing emission trade system that should be an opportunity for trade in this field too. Much higher than it has been. It's some few projects that what I could see has succeeded. And I saw also that Energy Department in Texas went to Brussels at the European Union to learn experience from the EU ETS. Have you been following that development to create trade opportunities on methane?
Well, there's some very interesting things going on that I don't fully understand, but we should pay attention to because they're emerging trends. And one of them is that there's an agency called ERCOT, which manages the electrical grid in the state of Texas. Texas is unique. It has a single state power system. And the regulatory agency is called ERCOT. And ERCOT is determined that methane is valuable enough that you shouldn't be using it to run the pumps in an oil field, that you should electrify your pumps so you'll have more LNG to sell to the rest of the world. So there's actually, the state of Texas is decarbonizing the biggest oil field in the United States so that they won't have to burn oil and gas at the oil field. They can export it all to Europe. So the trade dynamic is driving everything. And it's a huge opportunity for the Europeans to use their lever and to say, we are going to find the best and the cleanest oil and gas, and that's what we're going to use. And lo and behold, the world would suddenly have a lot more clean oil and gas.
When we then look at the present situation, where do you think we need to focus to get action into play?
The most important thing is for Europe, Japan, and Korea to simply say, we will take the cleanest gas we can find, and we will require it to get steadily cleaner, and it will get cleaned very quickly. That is, it is for those three big consumers. They are the market everybody wants. Nobody wants to be excluded from the European or the Korean market. And Europe and Korea can simply say, if you're dirtier, we're not going to buy yours.
So that's a message you will send to the European Union in the days to come?
Yes, that is a message which hopefully we have already been sending to the European Union. The European Union says they've already heard it, but let's keep sending it because, and you know, people should keep sending it to the United States because we aren't doing it right now because we have this new event whose name we shall not say.
Thank you for your insights around the methane. We may have some guests coming up in Transformer later on, industry leaders, to let them show what's possible.
Well, it is very heartening that you have them coming and that they are coming. And it is heartening that even if the United States is currently AWOL, Texas is not AWOL. Texas is actually cleaning up, which is really... This whole phenomenon in Texas is quite interesting because on the one hand, it's a place that won't put up simple alarms on a riverbank to stop a flood from killing people. So they're very reckless in some ways. And then on the other hand, they actually manage their power grid much better than anybody else. So it's an interesting combination of strength and weakness.
Great. Let's hope that knowledge and science and political willingness will drive some change in the time to come. Thank you for your contribution today.
Thank you very much, Kai.
I'm Kai Embren. Follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn, where I will be announcing the future guests to this podcast. And you can expect about 2 programs a month. And each guest has a unique story of making business and society sustainable. So find out more. Visit my homepage, kaiembren.org. Thank you for listening.